WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
I'm Terry Gross, and on this archive edition of Fresh Air, we have an interview with Tracy Ullman. Interviewing her is like interviewing a room full of people. She's constantly slipping in and out of character. And the range of characters she does is quite extraordinary. Ullman was a TV star in England when she moved to the States in the early 80s. In 1987, Fox TV launched her sketch comedy series, The Tracy Ullman Show. Her film credits include Plenty, I Love You to Death, Household Saints, and Bullets Over Broadway. She plays the editor of British Vogue in Robert Altman's latest film, Ready to Wear, about the French fashion shows that attract the international press. Ready to Wear has just come out on home video. I spoke with Tracy Ullman last winter when the film was released theatrically. She told me most of the fashion shows Altman filmed were real, but he told his actors to attend the shows in character.
You know, we were sent out with radio mics on us, and first of all, he sent us out first so that the incredible banks of paparazzi could get their photographs, mainly of Sophie Loren and Kim Basinger. I've never seen anything like it. I mean, uncontrolled media. I mean, I've never been to the Oscars, but I hope to. And I better go one day. And I guess they're all on bleachers and stuff, because you Americans, you know, you're like, hey, get back, buddy. This was unbelievable. It was very frightening. So he sent us out first to deal with the paparazzi, and he said, right, now we're going to go out again, and please leave us alone. And it was really weird to be sort of dressed up as the editor of British Vogue, staring at the real editor of British Vogue across from me, you know, on the runway, who was looking very nervous.
What was the difference between how the real editor was behaving and how you were behaving in that role?
None at all, Terry, because I'm a very convincing actress, you see. There was no... Well, this movie is somewhat farcical. It's sort of farcical documentary. It reminds me very much of Nashville. Altman's film on the country, take on the country and Western world.
Now, our listeners, many of them have also just seen you in Bullets Over Broadway. Now, I understand that you had been writing to Woody Allen for a long time, petitioning him to get a part for you in one of his films. What kind of correspondence did you have with him?
None. I wrote him a very dumb, naive letter, I think, back in the middle 80s when I first came to America and I was pregnant, and I used to sit around the house watching terrible sitcoms and thinking, what am I doing in this country? And then my husband said, what do you mean? You know, watch Woody Allen films. There's a wonderful element here. You know, he's such a snob. And I watched Broadway Danny Rose and just thought, wow. And I wrote a letter saying, hello, I'm British and I live in California right now. And would you like Mia to come and get in my jacuzzi and I could come and help you out with one of your films if she's tired? You know, it was like one of those really dumb letters. Never saw it. But I used to petition more his casting director, Juliet Taylor, because Woody's not an easy guy to get to. And Jeffrey Kurland, his costume designer, I met him once for tea, and he very kindly gave Woody a videotape of myself. And in 1988, I got a message back via Sam Cohen, the legendary agent, Woody's agent, saying, Woody's got a message for you. He says, it's not a matter of if he'll work with you, it's when. And he wants to tell you that he thinks you're funny from the inside. And I was so, Terry, that's a moment in my career. I mean, I was on my car phone at the time because I was in California. I just had to pull the car over and just, you know, let that moment wash over me. I was so proud. And then he didn't call for 5 years. So it worked eventually.
So how did the experience of being in a Woody Allen film compare with your expectations?
I didn't meet him till I was actually in costume, on the set, ready for take one. I didn't meet him. Usually you meet a director, you talk to them on the phone at least and say, what would you like me to do in this film? And you meet them at costume fittings and they check out your wig and everything. And I didn't meet him at all. And I thought, maybe I'm being filmed in isolation by a second unit and I won't actually get to be in the main picture at all. I thought, I'm never going to meet him. So it was a little disconcerting. But it was wonderful. It was wonderful. And
did you hit it off with him when you actually met?
I was very, you know, you give him his, I respect him so much, I gave him his space and didn't try and say, hey, Woody, this is funny, right? You know, I didn't push my luck. I sent him some rabbi cards, which I collect.
What, rabbi cards?
You heard of the rabbi cards?
No.
There's a company in Baltimore that distributes some cards called the Torah Personalities. And, I mean, you know, I guess The kids are collecting them, and they flip and swap on the temple steps. And they are pictures of all the rabbis. And they're just extraordinary. They're, you know, there are these wonderful old rabbis. And I've had the pleasure of passing them on to David Letterman, Mel Brooks, and now Woody Allen. And these guys get a big kick out of it, you know.
When you came to America, did you have to study American so that you could do American characters and so that you could caricature Americans?
I guess I came to America, I got married here in 83, and you can't just get off the plane from England and think you can impersonate Americans, because you have to be a part of the culture. And for a couple of years, I was pregnant, and I just hung around the house and just watched Leave It to Beaver reruns, like I say, on Broadway, Danny Rose, and Jim Brooks gave me lots of tapes of, you know, Your Show of Shows, and Annie Kovacs, and I sort of, you know, really went on an intense learning course. And then felt capable and to, you know, impersonate you all. And I've lived here for 10 years now. And I really do feel a part of it. So I don't feel like an intruder anymore.
You had a very funny HBO special, I guess it was about a year ago, maybe a little more, in which you played, I don't know, a whole lot of roles. Including the role of like a Midwestern tourist coming to New York.
Oh, that's right. Takes on New York, yeah.
Yeah, and then you were, you know, like a Jewish mother of the bride.
My favorites. I just love Jews equal funny.
Well, how
New York Jews equal funny. I just love these people. Well, I love being people like Fern Rosenthal.
Growing up Catholic in suburban England, how did you suburban London? How did you pick up on what the New York Jewish middle class style was that you picked up in that show, for instance?
I guess I didn't encounter them until I came to New York in the early 80s, and I have a very dear friend called Katie Volk from Baldwin, Long Island, and we went to see Freddie and Betty in Baldwin, and we went to see her parents, you know, and she said, Betty will come to the door, and she'll say, welcome to Baldwin. And she did. She said, welcome to Baldwin. And I just loved them, you know. They were so... After, you know, sometimes British people are so inhibited and it's so hard to get their true feelings out. And I just love the warmth of the New York Jewish people. They're so upfront. And they impressed me enormously. And I'm a parrot, as you can hear, Terry. I'm a mimic. And as soon as I met Betty, I mean, I was going home that night imitating her. And so there you go. And I just love to portray these people.
Tell me more about New York and California types that you've picked up on.
Well, you know, you do that stereotype. I do my stereotype. I'm working on me 12-step program, California Voice. But there is a lot of that there, you know. First impressions are very important. I like the New Yorkers who are transplanted to L.A. that bitch about the place all the time. I miss the seasons. You know, you're sick of hearing that there. Or they come out and they go, I miss the neighborhood and blah, blah, blah. And after 6 months, they're going, my pool guy did not show. And they're soon into the California. There's such a difference between New Yorkers and Los Angeles. And I'd never really seen the middle of the country, I realized, after I'd lived here a few years. And I asked Fox, who, when I did my television show on the Fox Network, I said, you're always sending me to L.A. and New York, and you talk so disparagingly about the people in middle America. I mean, it's... I always remember Joan Rivers putting one hand on one side and pushing her hands in and saying, dumber, 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 dumber about America till her hands met. And so I said, please, would you send me to Toledo, Ohio, and Nashville, and Tennessee? Please send me to meet the real people. And
they did.
I did a little tour, and I enjoyed it immensely. And I took Polaroids of people and taped their voices. And I have this special tape I can refer to.
My guest is Tracy Ullman. Her latest films are Bullets Over Broadway and Ready to Wear. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. Back with Tracy Ullman. Now, what were some of the personality types that you picked up on when you were performing in England?
Well, I used to do the same thing in England, really, Terry. I started off as a dancer when I was 16. You know, I'm an old soul. I left school really early and had to get out and make some money. And I used to travel around and take jobs in particular cities because I loved the accents. And all the types really in England and the types I impersonate in America too, there's always an analogy. Like, there's the girls in Queens have the same values and expectancies of like girls in Manchester, and I find Liverpudlians very akin to New Yorkers.
Could you demonstrate what it is that ties a girl from Manchester?
It was like, you know, like the Beatles, they were dead tough like that the whole time, making jokes, and they live in a really hard, tough, cold city, and they're just like all jokers, and you know, oh please, you know. And I find New Yorkers are just the same, you know, please, honey, don't wear your jewelry in the city, turn your rings. They're tough people from a tough city with a great sense of humour. Do you know what I'm saying?
Did you grew up in a couple of different places and in a couple of different classes in England?
Yeah, yeah.
Because your father was, I think, very wealthy, but he died when you were six, and you kind of dropped down in class and changed neighborhoods afterwards. So did you have different accents when you were young?
Yeah, I did jump around, and it's unusual to jump around in England in the class system. Usually you're born into it and that's it. You're stuck. My dad was a Polish immigrant. He came over after the war, so Tracy, he talked like this, you know, it's very, very different. And yeah, when he died when I was six, he made a lot of money. And then he died when I was six, and it was, I know, it didn't last long. And my mother wasn't really accepted in the Polish community to carry on his business. So there you go, there's a difference. So our fortunes came and went, and I did jump around, and having to be adaptable then, I think that's how I got. Because, as I say, you do get stuck in the British class system, and I never let it inhibit me. My husband is very working class, East End London, and he talks like that, and people have called him a barrow boy, and he gets really angry about it. But I just used to impersonate people. I mean, if I was with posh people in England, I'd just start talking like that, like one of Lady Diana's friends. Or talk like that if I go to the East End, do you know what I mean? And there's not many people that can jump around in the class system like that. And so they got very confused by me, and they don't know where I'm from.
So, but when you changed class,
yeah,
did you change accents as well?
Yeah, I mean, when my father died, up to that point, I'd been driving in Volvos and going to Gymkhana's, and we had ponies and things, and it was really brilliant, and we drank orange squash. And then my father died, and we had to go to, like, a public school, and I got beaten up in the playground, so I started talking a bit like that, you know. I soon adapted. Yeah, absolutely, I did.
Now, you started in acting school, I believe, when you were 12 years old. How did you know at such a young age that you wanted to perform?
I didn't really. It was, it's the class thing again. Here we go back to this. I was at a state, we call them state schools, the public schools in England, till I was 12. And I was very good in the end of term productions. You know, I was always in the school play, and I was always writing plays and amusing the other kids and impressing the teachers. And they said to my mother at the end of a particularly successful show, Tracy should go to a special school. I thought, oh, they mean like a remand home type place. So I was very naughty. So my mother thought, wow, you know, let's try and win a scholarship to one of those fancy places in London, and which indeed I did. And thanks to the socialist government of the time, I got a grant, a full scholarship to go to this place. And I thought it was horrible. It was like, you know, like Fame, that School of Performing Arts in Fame.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it wasn't like that. We didn't go into brilliant, unrehearsed dance routines in the hallways and stuff. It was just full of like really dumpy, fat, ugly kids, or pretty ones that whose parents wanted them to be stars. I mean, the whole thing of making kids act is really ugly. You know, it was like kids saying,
well, I've been in a Barbie commercial, so I don't have to study schoolwork because I'm going to be a star.
And I hated it. But it was great because, you know, I was going to a school in London, and it was like I was in middle class again.
But weren't you expelled when you were 16?
I was, yeah.
What for?
I just wouldn't take all that crap, Terry. I mean, I used to fight the system. I used to say, this is ridiculous. This isn't what show business is about. And the way that the principal of the school had got this school by winning money in like a lottery in England. She had no idea about show business. Her own kids went to the school. They were constantly given work and put up for auditions, and the competitiveness amongst, like, you know, these 8 to 16-year-olds was so ugly. And I used to complain about it. And they, you know, and then I just, when I realized it wasn't no good at complaining, I just used to be in my school uniform next door in the pub playing snooker all day. And they just got rid of me. Rebel, huh?
Were you upset when you were expelled?
My mother was, but the next week I just gathered myself together and went off to Berlin.
To perform?
yeah, as a dancer, to get my union ticket and to get out in the world. And, you know, I think not get too poignant here, girls that lose their fathers at an early age, I think we're pretty tough. I found that when I've met other kids that have lost their fathers, especially girls, you know. You're just more independent and you get out there and, you know, you do stuff. So that's what I did. Went to Berlin as a dancer with 20 other dancers, I think 14 flaming homosexuals in pink platform boots, who were just most wonderful guys.
So what kind of dancing?
Was it for a musical? It was Gigi. It was a production of Gigi in German. Uh-huh. So I know Gigi in German. Dunkeben, the kleiner Fee. And I was there for 4 months, and it was an extraordinary experience.
Now, I read something you said, which I wasn't sure whether it was a joke or for real, but you'd said that your mother had wanted you to get a nose job and breast implants when you were younger.
That was a joke.
That was a joke. Okay.
I guess, yeah, that was, no, she's not that type of mom. You know, we're not talking Rose, Mama Rose here. My mother never really pushed me. You know, she liked the fact I went to this stage school, but she wasn't a pushy mom. And she's got a great sense of humour, my mom. And, no, that was a joke.
What did you think of your looks when you were first starting out?
I guess that remark stems from the fact that I felt ugly at 12 years old, being put amongst all those kids, professional kids who were in Barbie commercials, and the blondes got the jobs, and the brunettes like me with the slightly suspect noses got pushed aside. And then I thought, oh God, is this going to matter later in life? And luckily I saw that it didn't matter. I remember being in a lineup of kids for a revival of Kismet or something in London they were doing, and they lined us up on the stage, 300 children, and a director stood there, stared at us for like 30 seconds, then said, okay, you step forward, and you. And he pointed right at me. And I stepped forward, and he went, no, not you, dear, the little girl with the blonde hair next to you. And you just don't forget things like that, you know. They treat children far worse than they do adults, actually, in this business.
So were you angry that talent was confused with blonde hair or a pert nose?
Yeah, I just thought, this is what it's all about, right, looking cute. So,
you've played people of all kinds of looks in your sketches. You've played people who are glamorous. You've played people who are very plain. In fact, in playing people who are very plain, I think, have you, like, padded your tummy a little bit to get, like, a little belly?
Oh, yes, I have all sorts of body padding. I have a wonderful costume lady called Jane Rum, who worked with me on the Tracy Ullman show and just won an Emmy for Takes on New York. And you should see our dressing room. It was amazing. I mean, we had big breasts, smaller breasts. We had like Jewish hips. We had like Guatemalan stomachs. It sounds very racist, but it's true. You know, if you look at the different groups of people, they do have sometimes distinct physical differences, and she's an expert at it, Jane. And my character Kay, I had the old cellulite legs and bottom, and I had big breasts made out of bird seed. And when we used to be dark on the show for a few months, they used to get stored in a storeroom, and every year we'd come back and Kay's breasts had been eaten by rats. That was always the first thing we did, first day of the new season. New Kay breasts, please, vermin have attacked them.
Do you ever worry that your characterizations will be interpreted as ethnic stereotypes?
No. Not if you give them enough heart. And when I did play a black lady, which was a big thing to do on the show, and then everyone said, well, look, Eddie Murphy was a white guy recently. Why shouldn't Tracy play a black lady? And I eventually did the piece, and I practiced putting on the prosthetic makeup of the black lady during the week. And I drove home from the makeup studio as a black lady in my Range Rover. I thought, if I get stopped now for speeding or something, I've got this black head and the rest of my body is, you know, white. I thought, oh, no, it'll just be very hard to explain. So I stopped off at Jim Brooks's house to show him the makeup. And he wouldn't let me in because he couldn't recognize me. And I finally got in and he's like, wow, man. wow, and immediately put on a Whitney Houston album. I said, Jim, please, you know, can we have some Aretha Franklin? And then I went home as a black lady and I just loved it. I mean, to be able to be black for a night, and I was singing and I was like giving my husband a hard time. And eventually I felt like a kid, Terry, because he just said to me, Tracy, that's enough. He was trying to get through to me because I was so into my character. Take the makeup off and go to bed. You're not black, you're Tracy. Please, would you just stop it now? You know. So, and I, when that character went out on the TV, I think a week later I was in Central Park and a couple of great black guys at the zoo there said, well done and thanks. You know, it was great you doing that and it was great fun and I felt really pleased.
Did you do any of the writing for the Tracy Ullman show?
I never had time to sit in on the writing all the time. Of course, my contribution was in coming up with characters and hopefully doing a sketch so well that it could evolve into something else. And there's a lot of ad-libbing and a lot of general discussion, and it was a group effort a lot of the time. But no, when I felt sorry for the writers on a TV show, because when you finish a season, I mean, I can go on vacation and they just sat there for the next few months writing it again. It's very, very hard.
So would you come up with a character, show it to the writers, and then they'd write a story for that character?
Yeah, they used to wait for me to be in character on a Friday night. And as I say, I would get so absorbed and so carried away. It was almost like talking in tongues. You know, I'd suddenly say, yeah, I'm getting something through now for Summer Storm. Yeah, I guess I have this Hispanic boyfriend and I have like this German shepherd who's like stinking out the place, and put that in the next script. And you know, I waited till I was in character to come up with ideas. It's like, write this down.
Do you miss the mania of doing a weekly show with lots and lots of characters now that you're doing more movies?
I don't miss it yet, I must admit, Terry, because it got awfully hard. It was awfully hard. It was terribly rewarding and a wonderful team of people to work with, but it was really draining sometimes. I really wanted to have another child as well, and I do. I have a 3-year-old now.
It
would be very hard to do a show like that and give enough to my children, who are really important to me.
Oh.
Isn't that nice to hear? They're really important to me.
Well, Tracy Ullman, I thank you so much for talking with us. It was really just a pleasure.
Oh, it's lovely to talk to you.
Tracy Ullman, recorded last winter. She co-stars in Robert Altman's film Ready to Wear, which just came out on video. Next year, she will have a new half-hour comedy series on HBO. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.